World Watchers is made possible in part by Aries Arts in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's growing consciousness for over 20 years. This is the anniversary, the birthday of Martin Luther King. Before I begin, I shall say also that it is broadcast number 841, January the 18th, 1988. The subject this evening is not going to be Martin Luther King himself. I think that that's pretty well covered by the media, the television, radio, the last few days. And those of you who are familiar with World Watchers know that that isn't my style, to take just the general kinds of speeches that King gives or to talk about the social advances he made, because on the broad overview, I think that we are in desperate trouble, we meaning blacks and whites, and particularly blacks. And it is time for blacks and whites to work together and get off their butts and quit worrying and thinking about the things that happened in the past and the progress we've made so far, or they have made so far, and think about much more serious things, what confronts the future and how to face that, instead of looking back and sobbing about what wasn't done. Martin Luther King Day was celebrated on Monterey Peninsula today, and the newspaper has carried the various offices and businesses that were closed. The federal courts were closed. All of these were closed, the state courts and offices, the county offices, the city offices, the banks and savings and loan, the post offices, the public schools. Some businesses were open, and what was normal schedule? Only the trash pickup. The trash pickup in my area, in Monterey Peninsula particularly, pardon me, is all black. Black men picking up the trash. For Martin Luther King's birthday, it wasn't a holiday. What is the holiday about? For the bankers, for the school teachers, for the students to go to the shopping centers or whatever, to do their skateboards up and down the hills. What is the holiday about? Why couldn't they have a holiday from trash pickup? In fact, Martin Luther King was killed in Memphis, Tennessee, when he was working for better wages for the people doing the trash collection. But isn't it ironic in our own community that the people who work today were the black community picking up our garbage, just as they have done for many, many years, and this holiday should have been one that they got the day off. Martin Luther King's son, Martin Luther King III, said, over the last 8 years, racism has grown in this country. I don't want to say it's just because of the Reagan administration's policies, but that's part of it. Well, you better believe that's part of it. Also, I might say that Martin Luther King's son might sit with mommy and ask about Ryosha Sasakawa, the Japanese war criminal, the man who describes himself as the lover of fascism, the great fascist. Last year, Mrs. King gave him the Martin Luther King Award. He was the man behind Reverend Moon. Well, the blacks are losing their jobs in this country because of Reverend Moon and Sasakawa. The factories are moving to South Korea. They're moving to Taiwan. Sasakawa helped form the World Anti-Communist League with Chiang Kai-shek and his son, the son that just died last week, and with South Korea. Our businesses are over there in Taiwan and South Korea and moved to the Philippines. The Philippine nurses come in and literally take over all the hospitals in America. There are very few black nurses anymore, or nursing schools. There are plenty of them in the Philippines, hundreds of them. Disneyland is closing their animation studios and moving to Taiwan. If you want to buy a present for somebody, it comes from Taiwan or Hong Kong or South Korea, the home base of Reverend Moon and Sasakawa, Ryosha Sasakawa. So while he gave Mrs. King $17 million for a memorial to Martin Luther King, he provides jobs in Southeast Asia and in Asia that blacks are not going to be able to have. Martin Luther King wanted a fair wage and a high wage or a decent wage for black workers. But you don't get a wage if there's no factory here. And when you take the factories away, what have you got? And what did Ryosha Sasakawa, he's still alive at 91, provide. They've encouraged our businesses and factories to leave this country and go over to other countries. And so the blacks have less jobs if you close up these factories and move them overseas. If a man like Martin Luther King wants fair wages for black people, and they've been substandard certainly for years, there certainly must be some people that follow what he wanted in stopping the domestic policies of shipping our factories and the things that we make out of the hands of the people who could be employed in this country and have a good way to earn a living instead of being forced to traffic and deal in drugs or live substandard kinds of levels. Now, there are problems for blacks that people don't address themselves to during the year. I don't hear it very much, and I talk about in the air all the time, whenever it comes up, that are important as what Martin Luther King wanted. When he was killed, you can be sure that the powers that be killed him and blew his head off because they thought he had gone far enough and had plans for doing other things to push his movement or those like-minded people backwards for a long time. There's an article, October 17, 1985. I just pulled about three of them out to make the point. Why blacks are less healthy and die younger. A study of there are more than 18,000 excess deaths among blacks due to heart attacks and strokes compared with that of the whites. And Margaret Heckler from the Reagan administration is describing their poor health care and how a tremendous percentage die younger. Another San Francisco Chronicle, July 1st, 1980, the puzzle of race and cancer rates. Blacks get cancer more than whites and more than Hispanics and Asians, and they're studying the overall white cancer rate to see why blacks get cancer. When the SLA was created by the CIA and there was this food program which specified getting chicken and poultry from Safeway, I wrote an article and had on the air the question of, are these chickens the one that was the kind that were sent from Mississippi to the school programs of blacks in Chicago and up in Detroit for the poor black children that had dioxin that caused cancer? There was actually an expose of chemicals that cause cancer in poultry that was being fed to young black children, small children. Now they'd be old enough to have that cancer. It doesn't just happen overnight. You know, people who put their children in cribs that have lead in the paint, there's people get cancer when they're 20 and 30 years old. They can chew the edge of the crib and appear safe, and then 23 years later, 30 years, the cancer begins. And I wondered about the cancer in Contra Costa County and up in Oakland when the SLA was throwing chickens at these people, if those were chickens with dioxin. And many cancer articles are out about the rates of blacks having cancer and being not less able to cure it than whites. This morning's paper had an article, Soviet spreading lies about the United States again. And Mr. Wick of the U.S. Information Agency is complaining that the Soviets told us they wouldn't have disinformation. But in Africa, there's articles that the United States has chemical weapons that came from Fort Detrick, Maryland, bacteriological weapons, and that they're testing them in South Africa. And U.S. officials are incensed by allegations that the United States is developing a biological weapon designed to kill individuals of a particular ethnic group or race, and similar reports have come out about the United States periodically. And this one report came out of Ghana January the 9th, and they mentioned a doctor, and the TASS had an account about it. Richard Ambrosio went to Fort Detrick September 5th, 1986, and described laboratories engaging in bacteriological weapons, gene engineering, military applications of these kinds of things. Mr. Charles Wick was incensed. Well, I went right to my book, The Higher Form of Killing, and in my files on ways to die and ways to kill blacks and minorities. I have other articles, but it's easy to get the book, The Higher Form of Killing. And this is on biological warfare. And in it, just one example, page 176, three German nerve gases, names of gases and poisons were sent to Great Britain. The Nazis concentrated these particular gases and used them. And then in Great Britain, they put them together and made nerve gas shells. And then they took them and tested them in Africa, in West Africa. They took them out of Great Britain from Porton down, where they developed the weapons, and they did their testing for these weapons in Africa. That's why I keep talking about the Cameroon Lake and the neutron bomb that I believe was tested at Cameroon at the time of those explosions. Also in Higher Form of Killing on page 240, it says, man's increasing understanding of the delicate mechanism which makes life possible may also solve the problem how to design a weapon which will kill an enemy while leaving friendly troops unharmed. In particular, military scientists are rekindling their interest in ethnic weapons designed to affect only selected racial groups. And there was a military manual published in 1975 on developing ethnic weapons that would, some kinds of food that would hit the blacks, the others that would get the American Indians, the Cherokee Indians, and so on. And this was taken over and worked on by the Advanced Projects Research Agency. And Charles Wick and the U.S. Information Agency say, how dare you say that we're doing this? And there are warnings from Ghana and from the Soviet Union that out of Fort Detrick, Maryland, that these things are happening. And then one of my favorite quotations out of that book that David Emery uses so much is the part that in 1962, 40 scientists got together studying Army biological warfare. And they worked full-time on genetics research, and the implications were specific. The Department of Defense said within the next 5 to 10 years, it would be possible to make a new, ineffective microorganism which could differ in certain important respects from any known disease-causing organisms. Most important of these is it might be refractory to the immunological and therapeutical processes. This was to break down your system so that your immune system would not respond or protect you, and they decided it would take 5 to 10 years. That was in 1962 when they met, and then Litton Industries was turned over, entered into Fort Detrick, Maryland. The germ warfare was moved out, and Henry Kissinger, and responsible for this, and the administration of Richard Nixon, turned Fort Detrick over to Litton Industries, and they began working on breaking the immune system. And the immune system is possible to kill every person in Africa, every black person in Africa and in the United States, and they can be rounded up just as if they have leprosy. A lot of the AIDS can be put into or mixed with the needles, with the drugs, and it would be an excuse to start rounding up black people in this country. There was a plan that came out in 1973 called Heliotrope. The target was a few years later, but the idea was that the CIA and the Green Berets would work hard and find a way to create a plan to take over the United States. And the plan would be to round up all non-white peoples and eliminate them. And no person who's more than one quarter white will be able to survive. It will be the extinction of all Mexicans, Indian Americans, Latins, Orientals, and mixed people. And this heliotrope was one of the plans the government had that would make the 8 million in Germany look minute. Now, last year, on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's birthday, I talked about how the FBI had harassed him and coaxed him to wipe himself out, and he wouldn't do it, kill himself. And then I read the King Alfred plan on the air, and I do this every few years. I read that entire King Alfred plan. It's only 2 pages on Pacifica just about 2 months ago with Barry Scott's program. And this came out of the National Security Council, the plan I have. It isn't out of John Williams' book, The Man Who Cried I Am. This is 2 pages of the National Security Council plan for vaporizing 22 million blacks in America, to vaporize them, to break their organizations, and it lists the organizations. If you want that tape, and all tapes are available of past broadcasts, that was broadcast 789, January 19th, 1987. And after I had that on the air on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's birthday, We learned that was just last January, and then the Iran-Contra affair opened up, and then Ali North's secret government and his secret team with Richard Secord and Albert Hakim and Theodore Shackley and that gang of horrible people began to be revealed during the summer. And then the Miami Herald had an article July 5th, which I shared with you, about Mr. Gufrida, the head of the Federal Emergency Management. And Mr. Gufrida had studied at Carlisle, Pennsylvania with the War College in 1970, then moved to California to work with Ronald Reagan and the Defense Department with Ed Meese. And by 1986, Gufrida had been working in the White House since Reagan was elected, since 1981. By 1986, they were exposed. And Miami Herald has a long article dated Sunday, July 5th, 1987, that Mr. Gufrida's plan, and he worked hand-in-hand with Ali North. North was part of the Federal Emergency Management, was the relocation of 21 million American Negroes. That's the National Security Council in 1986, and that the other was the National Security Council document 20 years earlier. These plans were being drawn up, but it was the same plans. Actually, 1969 is when, or 68 is when the other first came out. But it's the same plans. It's the same amount of people. It's the same people that the government wants to wipe out completely. 18 years difference, but Mr. Gufrida and FEMA are still around, even though he resigned or was kicked out of the federal emergency. He's just a hair's breadth away, and Ali North is still in the Defense Department. Now, in lieu of Martin Luther King's birthday, there is a long article I've been wanting to share on the air, and I decided to read sections from a book that came out written by James Earl Ray instead. But I want to mention this long article and maybe put it on the air for you next week or the week after. It came out in 1983, March 21st, 1983, and it's about a collection of people who worked together with organized crime, Robert Vesco, the Mafia, Michele Sindona from the Vatican, the Argentine military junta, and the James Earl Ray story fits into this overall plan. These are the mastermind people that take the cash and take it out of banks. Sindona is dead now. The $45 million out of the Franklin National Bank is in the hands of some good fascists, we can suppose. And this long article is about a lot of missing money that took place at one time. It's about Robert Vesco's $60 million. Well, Robert Vesco's attorney and advisor is Kenneth Bialkin. Bialkin was at the White House for dinner when Mr. Gorbachev was here. This last month, Kenneth Bialkin is a partner in the law office of Wilkie Farr and Gallagher that represent Mr. Willard Zucker over there in Switzerland that carries the money for the secret team, for the Security Council, for the National Security secret operations, so secret that even the Defense Department isn't supposed to know about them. They also represent Robert Vesco. And this Vesco connection to organized crime, to the Knights of Malta, to the Nazis, the group that tried to take the island of Dominica. He's a partner with Carlos Letter Rivas, the fellow from Colombia who has the statues of Hitler around. These are not nice people. Vesco's millions are described in this article. And Michele Sindona, as part of the P2, that genocidal group, the Vatican banker working with Licio Gelli. And the third person in this article is David Graver, G-R-A-I-V-E-R. It's a long story which I outlined and I'll share with you. Graver took $40 million from the American Bank and Trust Company. And just the bank was started by Avril Harriman, the same Avril Harriman whose wife Pamela was taking Reza Gorbachev around Washington, D.C., and Harriman was close to the Soviet Union. His wife is close to the Soviet Union. It's scary that these people have these alignments. These are fascists who have alignments with the current government of the Soviet Union. David Graver took $40 million from the American Bank and Trust that was originally formed by the Harrimans, and he took this money and disappeared on an airplane. They believe that there's a controversy of whether he really did die in an airplane crash. He was supposed to appear in court, and a week before he appeared in court, this plane crashed, and goodness knows where the $40 million is. And this money that he took, Graver's money, led to the Sterling Bank and the attorney for Sterling Bank, of course, is Arthur Lyman and Simon Rifkin, the very investigators of the Iran-Contra Committee. And what I'm leading to is that all of these people are tangled into the murder of Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and John Kennedy. And I'm going to talk about King tonight because it is the anniversary of King's birthday. But the David Graeber story is important because James Earl Ray, who's been in prison now for 20 years, has seen pictures and recognized Graeber a few years ago. I had this on World Watchers 10 years ago before his book came out. He recognized David Graeber, who travels with the likes of the Willard Zucker, Robert Vesco, Michele Sindone, and the heads of the Mossad. Graeber hired, employed Raoul, R-A-O-U-L, the man that James Earl Ray was to meet in Montreal, who gave him the money to go to different cities. Ray had never been to Memphis, Tennessee in his life, who had him there the day that King was killed, and he was framed. He didn't shoot Martin Luther King. These other teams behind the scenes always do the killings. James Earl Ray is in prison, serving time, and Graeber had hired Raoul and made the arrangements. And when James Earl Ray was traveling in Mexico and then to Los Angeles, he went on New Orleans to meet Raoul, and Raoul was making all the contacts and getting the gun and putting it in a location and having him in Memphis and being identified as the fall guy for the assassination. And James Earl Ray has sat in prison and gotten books and freedom of information material to study how he got entrapped. And how he got entrapped is our problem as well as his problem, because that's the world we live in, and we have to face that world and live with what they bring us in the future. And these people have these continuous plans for our future. The New York Times, December the 11th, 1978, had a article, "Did Air Crash Kill Banker? A Fraud Indictment Says No." And this is the evidence that David Graeber switched planes and that a plane blew up in Mexico and this, he disappeared with the $40 million. And at the time, he was the masterminding of another $50 million scandal. Some say 40, the others 50. He was supposed to appear in court. And the investigation of the airplane and the parts of the airplane, I won't go into the discrepancies now, but they didn't believe that he was on the plane. The Washington Post had an article, "Death of Wheeler Dealer Raises a Question of Fraud." I'll give you the dates because you may want to go to the search part of the library. Many of you listen to the broadcast and go and look up these articles. This is San Jose Mercury and Washington Post, November the 5th, 1978. A picture of Graeber. Now, was James Earl Ray sitting in prison, who found out his real name is Mr. Gitnach, G-I-T-N-A-C-H. Mr. David Graeber, always known as Graeber, went between Argentina with the Nazis in Argentina, the junta down there, and took money from the radical left. They gave him $17 million because they thought he would come to the United States and help them. And he simply stole their money and put it with his other money, then took $50 million out of the American Bank and Trust. And like Robert Bresco and Frank Turpel, or that Mike Riccari that I talked about last week, these people are floating around with just about unlimited money. Now, the thing that I wanted to share with you this evening is pertinent to what I've been talking about for the last few weeks since the end of October, the middle of October, which is the occult and the control of the occult in our country, a subject which I barely studied. I have books on Hitler and the occult and have read them, but had never made the connection. Either I didn't pursue it enough or there wasn't enough evidence, never made the connection of how high up Heinrich Himmler's Gestapo, Waffen-SS, occult mindset went to our Pentagon, pardon me, until the stories broke about Michael Aquino, who worked in the Delta Force in Vietnam, was an expert psychological mind control, formed the Church of Satan, Church of Set, while in Southeast Asia, takes with the NATO forces and maneuvers in Europe in 1982, goes to Himmler's castle and recreates the services of Heinrich Himmler with the occult and keeps the Nazi uniforms and paraphernalia in his home or homes while he works in the army, is stationed in St. Louis now. I never understood how high up the occult goes. And the reason I bring it up again and repeat the importance of the Quino story is that I have a book that I've mentioned on the air a little bit, haven't done all that I've wanted to do on it. It came out by James Earl Ray this year, past year, called Tennessee Waltz, The Making of a Political Prisoner, how James Earl Ray, the man charged with killing Martin Luther King, got locked up and who locked him up. And James Earl Ray wrote the book, published by St. Andrew's Press. Now, there's a foreword in the book, which I read, and every week I learn new things, luckily, and get a new perspective on what I'm seeing. There's a foreword in the book by the publisher, Frederick Tupper Saucy, S-A-U-S-S-Y. And he explains, now that you read this, this is a man who was murdered, and he's a charismatic leader of America's 20 million black citizens. That's the number in the King Alfred plan. That's the number that Ollie North has to round up, that nice little figure of 20 million black citizens. And he said, let me warn you, this book isn't pleasant. The foreword said, it may threaten you, it may discourage you, but he is gives you a story of James Earl Ray and how James Earl Ray collected all of his manuscript and worked on himself, putting together for six, 7 years from 1980 to 86, a manuscript of 300 typewritten pages. And that's the foreword. And then the conclusion of the book, after James Earl Ray's book is published, and it has many links to the Kennedy assassination in there, it has many links to the past conspiracies that have happened, particularly the links to the murder of John Kennedy. Then the end of the book, Tupper Saucy has a afterword called The Politics of Witchcraft. And I read it before, but I didn't understand it, because he doesn't know who Michael Aquino is. But what he is saying is that our country is controlled by witchcraft. And I read it again to see what he meant, because after all the evidence and the experience that Ray knows he didn't kill Martin Luther King, and he knows who's covering it up and how they cover it up and how they take a person and say the public can believe you did it, that what Tupper Saucy is saying, that this country is going down to hell so fast. And he gives all the different ways it's declining. All the dreams that Martin had are going like quicksand down. Anybody's dreams are going fast. And he talks about how witchcraft has taken over the country. Well, with that in mind, I think of the direct links of Michael Aquino, the Delta Force, the psychological warfare, the swastikas, Himmler. And then I think of how James Earl Ray said that Martin Luther King had to be killed in election year. It was for Agnew, who worked with the Greek military junta of the Nazis. They needed the black riots in election year. And thinking about the rounding up of the blacks, if the blacks would riot. And then Ollie North was part of the Delta Force and is obviously a victim of the mind control. I've talked about that. And North works with people who are evil. Robert Brown of Soldier of Fortune, John Singlaub. They work with the Peregrine Company that say, we have to hire men who've killed because we're going to kill again. The mentality that is in control is kill and more kill. I'll take a one-minute break now, give you a little breather, and go on to the witchcraft that Tupper Saucy's talking about, and it takes on a different meaning for me at this point, putting the pieces together, what he's trying to say.